This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
On Thursday, I got up early. I made muffins for my son, had a couple cups of coffee, and I was having a quiet domestic morning. And then, at 7:23 a.m., Elon Musk tweeted. It was one line, no punctuation even. It said, "I made an offer." And there was a link to the securities filing where Musk proposed buying Twitter and taking it private. So I scrapped the workday I had planned and got Felix Salmon on the line. Felix is the host of Slate Money, and he's the chief financial correspondent at Axios. Hello, Felix Salmon.
Good morning, Lizzie O'Leary.
Welcome to All Elon All the Time.
We thought we could get away from him, but we were wrong.
Our show last Friday was all about Elon Musk buying a roughly 9% stake in Twitter and maybe joining the company's board. After that show aired, Twitter's CEO Parag Agrawal announced in a note to his employees that no, Musk would not be joining the board after all. The note ended by saying, "There will be distractions ahead, but our goals and priorities remain unchanged."
This is the worst case distraction for Parag Agrawal and anyone trying to concentrate on doing their jobs at Twitter, because this is the mother of all distractions.
You know, I admit at the time I was skeptical of the scenario of Elon Musk attempting to buy the whole company. You were not. You said something very prescient last week, which was, everyone knows that if Elon wants 9.2% of Twitter, what he really wants is 100% of Twitter. Congrats on being right.
Honestly, I wasn't convinced he was going to make a bid for the whole thing. I know that it sounds prescient, but there's a difference between wanting 100% of Twitter and actually trying to put funding together to spend $43 billion on Twitter, which, even if you're Elon Musk, is a non-trivial amount of money.
Several hours after he announced that he was trying to take over Twitter, Musk told an interviewer during a TED Talk, where else, that he was unsure about whether he could pull this off, but that he wanted to try because he sees Twitter as a kind of public square.
It's important to the function of democracy. It's important to the function of the United States as a free country and on many other countries, and to help freedom in the world.
Today on the show, what does Elon Musk really want with Twitter? Is this a genuine bid to mold the social network in his image? Or does he want to have a little fun, make some money, and walk away? I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
I wanted Felix to set the table for us a little bit, especially for people who have not been following Elon Musk's every tweet. How did we get from last week to here?
Okay, that's relatively understood. Not simple, but it's understood. First, Elon buys a large chunk of Twitter stock, makes an SEC filing saying he has no strategic goals whatsoever. He's just a passive investor. Then, very shortly thereafter, he changes his mind saying, well, there is a strategic goal, and actually I'd like to join the board. Jack Dorsey, the co-founder, says, I've been trying to get him on the board for ages. Parag Agrawal, the CEO, says, it's going to be great having Elon on the board. But then, as part of the process of getting him on the board, literally the day he was meant to join the board, he sends him a letter saying, eh, never mind, I don't want to join the board after all. I think he persuaded himself that being on the board would not be enough. And what he really needed to do was own the company. So he said, nope, because according to the board agreement, he couldn't make a bid if he was on the board. So he decided not to join the board. And this is the other shoe dropping.
Why does Elon Musk want to buy Twitter?
Am I allowed to say billionaire whimsy?
I think you can say that, yeah.
When you're a billionaire, the world doesn't work the same way that it does with everyone else. He has 200 and some billion dollars. Why not? It's a toy. He gets to play with it.
I want to read from his securities filings because I found this little part interesting. He says, I invested in Twitter as I believe in its potential to be the platform for free speech around the globe. And I believe free speech is a societal imperative for a functioning democracy. However, since making my investment, I now realize the company will neither thrive nor serve this societal imperative in its current form. Twitter needs to be transformed as a private company. Help me unpack this a little bit. Do you believe this statement about free speech as he sees free speech?
I believe that he believes it. I don't think he's being disingenuous here. He sees the way that Twitter has been approaching abuse on the platform and the way that it's beefing up moderation and the way that it's happier to suspend people and ban people as all being bad things. He knows that there were a lot of calls for him, Elon Musk, to be banned a few years ago. I was one of the people who were making those calls back when he was harassing a bunch of journalists, calling people pedophiles, that kind of thing. So he would love to see a much more laissez-faire Twitter. And he thinks, I think he might even be right in thinking this, that there's no way we're going to get a much more laissez-faire Twitter so long as it's a public company with a broadly diverse board and so on and so forth.
Musk outlined his vision of Twitter in broad strokes in his TED interview on Thursday.
My strong intuitive sense is that having a public platform that is maximally trusted and broadly inclusive is extremely important to the future of civilization.
He got a pretty sympathetic reception from the TED audience and from certain sections of the internet. Do you think, looking at the reaction from people on the right, there was a lot of praise. Megyn Kelly, Nigel Farage, Dinesh D'Souza, they're all saying, yay, congratulations. What do you think they see in Elon Musk or what he has said about Twitter that's making them so happy?
I think reading between the lines, the big thing that they see is that if this is a freedom of speech network where anyone can say anything, then the first thing he does is he allows Trump back. Hmm. And they know that Trump is likely to be the Republican nominee and that he gets a huge amount of benefit from Twitter. And that if Trump is allowed back on Twitter, then that's going to help their electoral chances in 2024.
Does being a private company change that at all? Does it make it more likely that he could do whatever he wants in that way?
It's, I think, the only way that he can do whatever he wants in that way. Owning 9.2% of Twitter certainly does not give him the ability to bring Trump back. Owning 100% of Twitter certainly does.
So let's go through the steps that it would take. Let's rely on your longtime money expertise. He has made this offering to, you know, buy these outstanding shares. What happens?
So now it's up to the board. The board has received an offer with extremely vague funding contingencies. You know, when you're selling a house and you get all of these offers and some of them saying, like, I'm waiving a financing contingency, and the other ones are saying, I will buy the house, but only if I can get a mortgage. Elon's basically saying, I'm offering this, but only if I can get a mortgage. He's not being at all clear where he expects to find this money. So it could all fall apart at that point. The board is going to want to see a credible financing package lined up. But assuming that he has a credible financing package lined up, which is a big assumption, then the board is going to say, do we think that $54.20 per share is a good price for the company?
Is it?
It was a lot higher than that just as recently as October. And Elliott Associates is this activist investor who bought at about that level, and they're going to want to make a profit. But let's say that they say yes. If they say yes, then basically that's the deal done. The board says yes, Elon Musk raises the cash, and then everyone who has Twitter shares wakes up the following morning with no Twitter shares and with $54.20 per share in cash instead.
And what happens to regular old users if that's the case? Do you think people turn away? Do they care?
People care, but it's far from clear where they're going to turn to. I mean, they're not going to go to Truth Social. One of the reasons why Twitter has lasted as long as it has is because it's Twitter. There's no other alternative to it, really.
Even though it's a small company, it's nowhere near, you know, the size of Facebook, anything like that.
Well, it's a huge company. It's worth, according to Elon Musk, $43 billion. It has hundreds of millions of users around the world, and it has outside, yeah, and it punches above its weight in terms of public impact. The only way in which Twitter is a small company is if you're comparing it to Facebook. Like, in any other context, it is enormous.
I guess it's the punching above its weight part that I'm getting at, because you're right, there is no other option.
And yeah, trying to sort of orchestrate a mass exodus from Twitter would be practically impossible. There's a huge amount of lock-in effect. But yeah, if Elon owns Twitter, he can, if he gets pissed off at a journalist, he can just ban that journalist. No recourse, you know? If he wanted, like, his own tweets to be in a bigger font, if he wanted everyone on Twitter to automatically be following Elon, like, he could do any of that.
Mark Cuban posited an interesting theory, which, of course, he posted on Twitter, that if Elon sells, then some other company like Facebook or Google would step in and try to buy Twitter. That certainly seems like something the board might be more likely to go for. They do have a fiduciary duty here, you know, vis-a-vis the Elon offer. What do you think?
I think there is zero chance that Google or Facebook or any large tech company would ever be able to buy Twitter. No way, given the Biden administration's antitrust stance and the general anti-tech opinions in Washington, no one is going to even try that one. It would obviously be a monopolistic, anti-competitive move, and there's just no way.
When we come back, what could happen if the board says no way?
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What comes to mind when you think of Amber Heard? A liar? A survivor? A narcissist? The trial of Depp v. Heard was a global phenomenon, but I want to know, was it a fair fight? I'm Alexi Mostras, the host of Sweet Bobby and Hoaxed. In my new podcast, I'm investigating whether Amber Heard was the victim of an organized trolling campaign.
The entire series is now available to binge wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Who Trolled Amber.
Felix was right last week that Elon Musk wanted to buy Twitter. So I asked him to do some more predicting for me, lay out the likely scenarios as he sees them.
So the first thing that happens is that the Twitter board rejects the offer. They say that it doesn't fully value Twitter, that, you know, a la JP Morgan, there is more upside from something, something, product, something. Then the ball is back in Elon's court. He can stick around with his 9.2%. He can sell his 9.2%, or he can raise his ostensibly best and final bid and try and sweeten it somehow. My guess is that probably he dumps his stock, makes $800 million profit on buying low, selling high, and walks away.
Yeah, let's say this whole thing falls apart and he does walk away. Like, what's the upside for Elon there?
Many hundreds of millions of dollars is the upside. Assuming that he can sell roughly at the price that Twitter is trading at right now, which is a generous assumption, maybe he can't. But realistically, he is going to be able to sell his stake at a price significantly higher than he bought it for. And so that's a nice short-term capital gain for him.
Is this all some elaborate pump and dump?
I mean, maybe it is. You know, he can do it with Dogecoin. Why not do it with Twitter?
JP Morgan seems to agree with you, by the way. They said that the shares have significantly greater upside if management is able to execute on its plan to innovate on product, grow the user base 20%, and build out direct response advertising. They don't think this is going to be accepted by the board. And yet here we are talking about it. This is the thing about Elon Musk. It's really hard to tell if he is making serious corporate offers or doing billionaire whimsy.
When you're Elon, I don't think there's a difference. You kind of don't know whether he's a superhero or a supervillain, right? And he kind of like switches back and forth between the two. One minute he's Iron Man and next minute he's the Green Goblin. So he seems to be in Goblin mode right now. Like, he literally put out a tweet saying he was in Goblin mode, and I think we can take that at face value. What that means, we don't really know, but he's causing mischief and he loves doing that.
That seems not great. Like, is it healthy for one man to have so much influence over the markets and the way we think about, you know, these great big companies?
Deeply, deeply unhealthy. Right now, the most powerful billionaire in the world is probably Mark Zuckerberg, because he controls Facebook, which is this, you know, the by far the largest social network in the world, and also owns Instagram and WhatsApp. But if Elon were to buy Twitter and had control of a social network which is basically responsible for having elected Trump the last time around, and if on top of that he also continues to control Tesla and SpaceX, then he would be giving Zuckerberg a run for his money, and he is much more prone to flexing his muscles than Zuckerberg is. He likes going out on Twitter and just saying, hey, guess what? I have all this power. I can troll people. I can do things like make $43 billion offers for Twitter just because I, you know, am bored this morning. And it does seem wrong that there's no checks and balances there. There's no accountability there. He can just do whatever he likes.
Felix Salmon, thank you very much.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Felix Salmon hosts Slate Money and is the chief financial correspondent at Axios. That is it for the show today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks. We're edited by Tori Bosch. Joanne Levine is the executive producer for What Next, and Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. It's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. We will be back on Sunday with another episode. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.